Hi, this is Jake, and you're listening to the Flight Training Podcast. So today we're continuing to talk about this month's discipline of simplicity, and today's focus is going to be on the idea of satisfaction. Should be a key component to simplicity, key thing that we gain through the tool of simplicity, but it's a difficult thing to grab at. And so today we're going to be talking a little bit about satisfaction, and then we're going to drive towards a couple options for you at the end of how you can take up a challenge to gain, I would say, a little more satisfaction. So I want to start with a quote from an Israeli historian, Yuval Noah Harari. I could be totally butchering his name, but liked this quote from him. He said, "We do not become satisfied by leading a peaceful and prosperous existence. Rather, we become satisfied when reality matches our expectations. The bad news is that as conditions improve, expectations balloon." Now, he uses kind of very dense language there. It says a lot. But he basically says that in order to be satisfied, it's not really about having, you know, peaceful, prosperous existence. It's... And that makes sense. A lot of folks are not happy, even if there's no immediate threat to their danger, even if they're in a very safe country, a very safe neighborhood, even if they have plenty of food and good shelter and clean water. You know, there's plenty of people that are not satisfied even with those things. So just having a peaceful or prosperous existence, that doesn't lead to satisfaction. What he's saying leads to satisfaction is when our reality, the situation we see around us, matches what our expectations are. And this makes sense if you have ever had a major shift in your living style, for instance, or your affluence, how much money you had. You may have been a time when all the people around you were so excited to get a pizza or something, to get something, and it's like, oh, everyone got so excited about this thing that maybe cost less than $10. And then you may be also can remember a time where there was plenty of stuff around the people you were around, and no one was happy, even though there was super exquisite stuff to be had, you know, and it was, they expected even better, you know, they had amazing steak, but it wasn't cooked quite right or whatever, and they're unhappy. And really that has a lot less to do with the steak or the pizza. It has to do with people's expectations. And if you have, expectations, they get higher and higher and higher, then you got to have more and more and more to satisfy them. And the problem that I think this quote hits on the head is that as your conditions improve, your expectations just go up. And so here's a good example of this from, I think, just we could all have a similar story in this, but I remember around the time I was shopping for an engagement ring for Chrissy, you know, I went from knowing nothing about engagement rings, never paying hardly any attention to rings on, you know, I couldn't have told you like how big a carat diamond was or a half carat or a 10 carat. You know, I wouldn't have really been able to guess if you'd shown me a bunch of diamonds, like which one's which. I mean, I could have told you which is bigger, but didn't really ever pay attention to exactly what rings looked like on fingers, you know, as far as the details of them. But once you start, you know, when I was getting ready to buy an engagement ring, that at the moment that I bought, it was the most expensive thing I'd ever bought. And I went from not knowing anything about rings to doing tons of research to try to not get just totally swindled on that. But one of the things I also did is I started to pay attention and have conversations about rings with some of my family. And I noticed that my grandma's wedding ring, it doesn't even really have an actual full diamond on it. It has little diamond chips. And that's her whole ring is, I mean, it's gold, but it has these little diamond chips in it. And then I talked to my mom and my dad by my mom's ring and the size of the diamond in her ring. And it was bigger than my grandma's ring, but it was still smaller than the average engagement rings bought today. And my dad talked about, though, at the time, around all of his friends, like that ring was actually bigger than most of his friends were buying for their fiancés or around that time. And yet I had this pressure of, you know, I was getting married a little bit later in life than my dad and mom had, and had a little bit more financial ability, and I went out and bought, you know, the best ring I felt like I could afford, and it was bigger than my mom's diamond, and it was obviously much bigger than my grandma's. And as I talked to my grandma about her past, you know, I mean, she grew up around in the Depression, and her and my grandpa met, you know, my grandpa was in World War II, and they're meeting around that time, and so you know, my grandma grew up in a house where she shared a bed with one of her brothers. Like, I don't know, not just when they're little tiny, and you know, they didn't always have enough stuff, and they didn't always have enough food, type of thing. I mean, I don't hear horror stories from my grandma. I mean, I think maybe they had enough food, but they didn't always have near what we have today. And even talking to my mom and my dad, they didn't have the sorts of things that I had as a kid. And now Chrissy and I are set up to try to even have more stuff for our kids. And there's kind of this idea of, like, as conditions improve, we all expect more and more and more and more. And the engagement ring is kind of a small, but it is a symbol of kind of the generations in America. If you talk to somebody who, you know, was born in the 20s or 30s, 1920 or 30s, they probably have way different expectations of, like, the first house after they move out of their parents' house, what it should be like. Way different expectations than someone born in the 60s or 50s. Way different expectations than someone born in the 70s or 80s. And also way different than someone born, you know, 10 years ago is going to have. So we think through that, I think we see this idea that, wow, feeling satisfied in life, there's this trick that we think, oh, if I get enough, if I get this other big thing, then I'll be satisfied. But look at your past. We've all hit barriers like that of, oh, I can't wait till I get my own place, or I can't wait till I get a nicer place, or I can't wait till I get a car, or I can't wait till I get a nicer car. And typically the happiness that getting that new thing typically fades. And what we wind up stuck in, typically, and advertisers are pushing us this way and stuff, everything in kind of our culture, I think, is pushing us towards enough is just a little more than you have. It's just, you just got to stretch a little bit further than you really can to get it. It's a little bit more than you can handle, a little bit more than you can afford. That's what's enough. You know, you should buy the car, not the one that you can pay for in cash. You should buy the one that you have to take a loan out for, and you can barely get by on the monthly payments, you know, when your job's going well. And if there's a little downturn in your job, then you're going to be in a crisis. You know, and it's like, why would we do that to ourselves? But we have this expectation that, oh, I'm not satisfied unless I have, and we just, our expectations get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it seems like giving ourselves more never makes us just sit back and say, like, oh, I've got enough. So if your enough is a little bit more than you currently have, if your enough is a little bit more than you currently have time for, a little bit more than you can currently handle, then you're light years away from the reality of simplicity. Simplicity drives this idea of, I have enough. I trust God to take care of me. I'm thankful for what I already have. And in fact, I can share what I already have. I have more than I need. Very different mindset. So that's simplicity. If you have that simplicity mindset, then you can be satisfied in all sorts of different situations. Whether you have a whole lot of money, whether you don't have very much, whether you have a whole lot of food, whether you don't have very much, whether you are, have a whole lot of responsibilities or you don't have very many. And a biblical passage that really shows this inward reality of satisfaction is Paul in Philippians chapter 4. And verse 13 gets quoted by a lot of people. And a lot of people think it means, oh, I can do everything. You know, I can climb Mount Everest because of Jesus giving me strength. And, you know, maybe that is true, but I don't think that is what this particular passage is talking about. It's not talking about whatever you set your mind to, Jesus will, you know, give you wings to do or give you the ability to do. It's actually talking about having an, no matter what situation I face, I can be satisfied because of Jesus. So look at the context here. Philippians chapter 4, verse 10 through 13. I rejoiced greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but had no opportunity to show it. Now, I didn't go back. If you want to read the beginning of chapter 4, what he's talking about there is the church in Philippi had donated some money to Paul to help him on his mission work. So he's saying, like, I was really excited when I got this financial gift from you guys. And when you first hear that, you think, like, oh, well, of course he's excited. He just got some money, you know? Paul tries to explain that's not what it is. In verse 11, he says, I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength." So there he's saying, verse 11 through 13, he's saying that no matter what is going on in my life, and when he says well-fed or hungry, he literally means like, I don't have enough food. I skipped a meal, but this is like, I feel weak or faint probably because I haven't eaten maybe in days. You know, that's the sort of hunger he's talking about, you know? So, but what he talks about is I've found the secret. I know how to be content if I don't have enough food or if I have more than I know what to do with, you know, even if I'm well fed. A lot of people struggle in life to be satisfied when they don't have enough to meet their physical needs. It's very, very challenging to not know where your next meal is coming from and to be hungry or to not know where you're going to sleep tonight and to not feel safe and to say I can be satisfied. That is very difficult to have that reality. Also, even difficult to say I have plenty and I'm not coveting more. I'm not after more. To be able to sit back and say, like, I had a great dinner, I've got I've got a bed to sleep in tonight, and I'm content with what I have. See, a lot of us, we think, oh yeah, I could never be content if I didn't know where my next meal was coming from. But a lot of us, if we're honest, we don't even know how to be content, even if there's no danger, even if we have a 3 months supply worth of food in our pantry, and even if we have tons of money in the bank, we still aren't content. What Paul is saying here is it's not about getting more stuff in your pantry. It's not about getting more money in your bank account. It's about Jesus giving you the strength to be satisfied. It's about your connection with Jesus allows you to know how to get through anything and to even be content to say, if I'm going through something hard, Jesus is here with me and there's something good to learn from Jesus, something good to grow in Jesus. Jesus has some purpose with this hardship. If there's something good, something to be thankful about. So that reality that we read about, I think we all read Philippians 4, 10 through 13. We think, oh, I want to be able to be content, whatever the circumstances. Most of us have a hard time getting there, though. And Richard Foster, in his book, Celebration of Discipline, he talks about this inward reality, but he says it's not just about changing your mindset. So here he says the Christian discipline of simplicity is an inward reality that results in an outward lifestyle. Skip on a sentence or so. He says, we deceive ourselves if we believe we can possess the inward reality without its having a profound effect on how we live. So if you want to just flip a switch and be content all the time, like Richard Foster saying, that doesn't exist. Like, Christian simplicity is a tool to get you to where Paul was. It's a tool, Christian simplicity at its fullest, it's an inward and outward thing. It's this inward trust and thankfulness that we've been talking about. It's just saying what I have is a gift and it's available to others and I trust God with my future. But having that inner reality, it doesn't come if you don't do anything different on the outside. You can't just say, oh, I'm not going to make any changes to my life and I'm going to be content, whatever happens. It doesn't work that way. So I've got two ideas for you this week. They both actually come from Richard Foster's book, Celebration of Discipline. And there's a positive and a negative one. And I'm going to let you choose which you want to do, because sometimes I give you these challenges and they can be a little tricky to figure out how to do. And so this time you got two options. You get to pick one. If you want to overachieve and do both, I'm not going to stop you, but I'm just expecting you to do one of these. So we're going to start with the negative or the subtraction one first. And that challenge here is to reject anything producing an addiction in you. Now, obviously, you know, we all know that like hard drugs and things like that can destroy our lives and we have to break free of those addictions. But what this is talking about specifically to do this week, if you want to take this challenge, is find one thing, probably a small thing, probably something that no one else would even care about. But if you are honest, you're addicted to it. And now you're like, wait, I'm not addicted to anything. Well, for instance, like if the last time you know, you really had to go to the bathroom. If you, instead of going directly to the bathroom, had to wander around your living room for a long time to find your cell phone so you could then go with your cell phone to the bathroom because you can't be disconnected from it for the 2 minutes that you're going to be on the toilet. You know, that could be, and this is, I mean, I have done that before. So I'm not judging you. I'm just saying, look, if you act like that, then maybe you're a little too close to your phone. If I act like, when I act like that, which is not, you know, maybe I need to do that this week. Get rid of the phone, or at least put some boundaries on it where I'm not connected to it. Okay, so reject anything producing an addiction in you. This could be something as simple as if you drink coffee all the time and you don't drink coffee one day, you'll probably have a withdrawal headache. Okay, and a withdrawal headache, that is a withdrawal. That is your body is addicted to the caffeine. And so you get a headache when you don't get the caffeine, and it affects your mood. Now, I'm not here to say coffee is evil and every single Christian needs to not drink coffee ever and you should judge anyone who ever drinks coffee. But here's the experiment this week, is find something that you have a hard time living without because you're addicted to it, and say, I'm letting go of that thing. I don't want to be stuck, unsatisfied because of something. I want my satisfaction to come from God, and so I'm going to let go of that thing I'm addicted to. I'm not going to let it have that much power over me. I'm going to cut it off. Okay, so whether that's TV, whether it's, I don't know, it could be all sorts of things that you can be addicted to in your life. Don't go too nuts and try to do 17 things at once. Pick just one thing and get rid of it this week. And at the end of the week, if you think like, okay, I got rid of it for a week, but I'm going to put it back into my life. Well, then now at least you can decide how to put it back in your life. Okay, you can at least make a decision. But at least for this week, cut out something that's addicted to you. Now you're like, oh man, Jake, you said there were going to be two, and I do not want to get rid of my coffee, or I do not want to get rid of my whatever. Well, here's a more positive. Instead of taking something out of your life, you're going to put something into your life. So the more positive one is to enjoy something this week without owning it. Enjoy something that you normally could purchase. Okay, so obviously you can't own a friend or a spouse or something like that, but it doesn't just mean go hang out with your spouse or go hang out with your friend. You can include them in this, but go do something, enjoy something, do something that could cost you money, that you normally would spend money on, but do it in such a way that you don't have to. Okay, you do it without a purchase. So for instance, if you like to watch movies, instead of going to buy a movie, go to the library and check a movie out, okay, to where you don't pay any money and you just borrow it and then you return it. Or normally maybe you and your friends, you go bowling every Friday night, let's say. It's just a random example, but you go spend money to hang out. Well, what if instead of going to spend money to do some sort of like get to know you activity, what if you found something you could do without buying anything? You know, you go to, it's a pretty cold time of year in February to go to a park, but you go enjoy something without purchasing anything, without paying for anything. Or what if like you have a project you're working on, you know, maybe you're doing a project in your house and you're like, oh, I really need to go buy a circular saw or something for this project you're working on. Instead of going and buying one, why don't you ask one of the other folks at church, like, hey, can I borrow your circular saw for this thing I'm working on? So enjoy something without owning it. Now, this is not just supposed to eventually make you a mooch that never buys your own stuff or something like that. What this is getting at, though, a lot of times we deceive ourselves with, oh, if I own it, then I control it. And so instead of sharing things with other people, instead of enjoying things just for what they are and then letting go of them, we get stuck in this rut of buying way more stuff than we could ever use. And then when you buy it, you got to take care of it and it becomes a mess. So for instance, and this involves spending some money, I guess this is not the perfect for instance, but I used to work at a marina on Blue Springs Lake, and people would buy boats, and boats are a lot of work to own. They break down a lot. They're kind of a terrible experience, honestly. Like, there's this joke at the marina about two happiest days in a boat owner's life are the day he gets his boat and the day he sells his boat, because owning a boat is no fun at all. But renting a boat is kind of a one and done deal, and it feels like maybe a ripoff because it's expensive to rent a boat. But just from working at a marina and being around a lot of boat owners and a lot of people who rented boats, I can tell you, like, the rentals, they get all the enjoyment and then they're done with it. They don't have the headache. you know? And in life, a lot of times we think like, oh, I really want to buy it so I can make it my way and have it exactly how I want it. And we feel cool for owning it or something. But a lot of things in life you can enjoy without spending any money. You know, you can have a date with your wife and not spend any money. Or like I said, can use the library. You can come up with your own ideas, but enjoy something without purchasing it. Because as we go through life, if we're dependent on buying stuff to enjoy it, then we're going to have basements that are full of stuff and storage units and all sorts of craziness that we have currently in our culture. But if we cultivate this idea of, I can like things that are around me without having to own them, without having to control them, I can take the goodness that's around me and enjoy it. I can receive it as a gift from God. Then we're, both these things put us a step closer to what Paul was talking about in Philippians. You know, and so when you let go of something you're addicted to, you know, for instance, if you let go of coffee and then something crazy comes up and you don't get your cup of coffee one day, if you're not addicted to it, then it doesn't ruin your morning. Or if you've built this habit of being able to enjoy things without owning them, you know, then on your way to work when there's this beautiful sunrise and you see it, and, you know, even if the place you're living in isn't that beautiful, even if the place you're going to work at isn't that cool, you see that sunrise and you soak it up, and it's better than buying a piece of art and putting it in your house because you were able to enjoy the art and you saw that, like, wow, enjoying the art and accepting it into my heart, owning it had nothing to do with that. It was about my attitude towards it. And so it starts to unlock these keys to satisfaction. Like our quote we opened with, satisfaction is not about just getting more stuff, getting more safety. It's really about our expectations. And ultimately, I think Paul really hit it on the nose, ultimately it's about when we view Jesus as the source of our strength, then we're able to be content whatever we face. So do one of those two challenges this week, and then I'm eager to hear about how it goes.